Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 36. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guest, speaker, educator, consultant, and champion of simple living, Duane Elgin, author of the classic Voluntary Simplicity. This is the first of two parts. We at Simple Living Works that believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, that is, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive lifestyle. It is not a hobby. It is not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everybody's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the motto, as our closing theme song says, live simply that others may simply live. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the five life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith, one, to challenge consumerism, two, to live justly, and three, to celebrate responsibly. Through the internet, we extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video, and links are listed in the show notes for those. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. I'm glad you're with me today. I'm in Paso Robles, California. My guest, Duane Elgin, is an internationally recognized speaker, author, and social visionary who looks beneath the surface turbulence of our times to explore the deeper trends that are transforming our world. In 2006, Duane received the International Goi Peace Award in Japan in recognition for his contribution to a global vision, consciousness, and lifestyle that fosters a more sustainable and spiritual culture. His books include The Living Universe, Where Are We? Who Are We? Where Are We Going? Published in 2009. Promise Ahead, A Vision of Hope and Action for Humanity's Future. Published in 2000. Voluntary Simplicity, Toward a Way of Life that is Outwardly Simple, Inwardly Rich. Originally published in 1981, updated in 1993, and again in 2010. And Awakening Earth, Exploring the Evolution of Human Culture and Consciousness, published in 1993. With Joseph Campbell and other scholars, he co-authored the book Changing Images of Man, way back in 1982. In addition, Duane has contributed chapters to 22 books and has published more than 100 major articles and blog posts. In the early 70s, he worked as a senior staff member of a joint presidential congressional commission on the American future, looking ahead from 1970 to the year 2000. He then worked as a senior social scientist with the think tank SRI International, where he co-authored numerous studies of the long-range future. For example, Anticipating Future National and Global Problems. That was for the president's science advisor. Also, Alternative Futures for Environmental Policy. That was for the Environmental Protection Agency. Also, The Future of the Automobile for the Ford Motor Company. And Limits to the Management of Large Complex Systems for the President's Science Advisor. As a speaker, Duane has given more than 300 keynotes and workshops with audiences ranging from business executives and civic groups to churches and college students. For the past 3 years, he has been the executive director of a project that has brought together more than a dozen great transition stories that offer new cultural narratives for our collective imagination and that can help guide us toward a sustainable and meaningful future. He is now developing a growing number of collaborations with organizations in business, film and media, colleges and universities, and more. He has an MBA from the Wharton Business School, an MA in Economic History from the University of Pennsylvania, and an honorary Doctor of Philosophy for work in ecological and spiritual transformation from the California Institute for Integral Studies in San Francisco. Over the past 30 years, Duane has co-founded three nonprofit organizations working for media accountability, citizen empowerment, and a transpartisan community voice movement using the television airwaves legally owned by the public. Duane is married to Colleen Ledru Elgin and he is a father and grandfather. Dwayne and Colleen have collaborated on various projects such as the video overview of Dwayne's book, The Living Universe, and a book they co-authored, Living Legacies. His professional website is greattransitionstories.org. His personal site is DwayneElgin.com.
You and I were both involved in the Simplicity Forum that was organized by Vicki Robin over a decade ago. I'm not sure that we ever actually met at one of those meetings, but I've felt very close to you for a long time. When I ran Alternatives for Simple Living, of course, we promoted your books, Voluntary Simplicity and Hope for the Future. And so it's just really great to connect with you. I'd like to start, if it's okay, by saying that my wife and I were touched by the Voluntary Simplicity movement early in the 1980s when we read the book Living More with Less by a Mennonite woman, Doris Jansen Longacre. And that comes from a faith-based perspective, and our organization, Simple Living Works, is overtly Christian. Now, your book, Voluntary Simplicity, we've thought of as being more appropriate for a secular audience. And can you explain or enlighten me about whether I'm correct on that, or whether you come from a particular philosophical or religious point of view?
Oh, good question. First of all, Gerald, I've been aware of your work since certainly before the 80s. My introduction to simplicity goes back a half a century when I turned 21 living in Paris. I had dropped out of college. I was studying to be a doctor, and I dropped out, and I went to Paris, and I was living in a house there with a bunch of French students, and there was a priest there that had been sent off from the United States for causing trouble, Daniel Berrigan. And so for about a half a year, a semester there in Paris, Dan Berrigan and I would go out, and he would put a scarf around his clerical collar, and as some people know, he became one of the most prominent anti-war activists in the Vietnam era. And he was also a man of great simplicity, and he inspired me. So that was in 1963, and about a decade later, I was working on a presidential commission in Washington, my first work out of college. And in 1972, I wrote an article for that commission called The Poverty of Our Abundance. And that was really looking at what are we doing with our affluence as a society. And John D. Rockefeller III was the head of the commission. That was not well received, as it turned out. I was naive in thinking it might. And then 3 years later, I was working at the Stanford Research Institute, and in 1976 published a report called Voluntary Simplicity. And it was inspired by Richard Gregg, who in 1936 wrote that article on voluntary simplicity. So there's a deep history here to both my work on simplicity and being inspired by others, including yourself. So to your question, is my work more secular or more spiritual? Well, it has a strong spiritual dimension to it, and I see simplicity as having both an inner and an outer aspect. People tend to focus on the outer aspect of, it's living more but with less. So let's talk about less. And isn't simplicity a life of sacrifice and so on and so on? And I have to explain, no, it's a life of satisfaction and this and that. But there is a deep spiritual connection to simplicity, and it goes to all of the world's wisdom traditions. And that's something that's really engaged me over the years, is how every one of the world's wisdom traditions has its own view of simplicity. And in Buddhism, it's the middle way. In Greek mythology and wisdom, it's living a life really of balance. Not too much, not too little, but living a life of balance. So it's really found in all of the world's wisdom traditions, and that has been a very important grounding for me, and I've tried to bring that into most of my writing.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Dan Berrigan, because we've worked with him also. In fact, just this past December, we were urging people to read some of the writings that we had published by Dan Berrigan specifically for the Advent and Christmas time. So that's a vital connection.
Yeah.
Well, since writing Voluntary Simplicity in the early 80s, I've noticed that you've updated it in the 90s, and now you update it again in 2010.
Yeah.
So tell us, how have things changed over those years?
Boy, I think life is really moving along at a pretty high rate of speed here, I would say. And things have changed greatly. And one way I like to summarize the how things have changed is that in the 70s, I was, you know, I have an MBA from the Wharton Business School, so I speak to business audiences. And in the 70s, I was introduced to this large business audience as an MBA gone bad. An MBA gone bad. And some 20, 25 years later, I was introduced again to a business audience, but this time as an MBA gone green. What? So so from going bad to going green represents, really, just summarizing, an extraordinary transition in human perceptions and values. And instead of seeing it as pushing against the system, it's now being seen as pioneering a new wave beyond traditional industrial society and into an era of sustainability and green living, if you will.
Well, I need to ask you about your point of view also, because you are encouraging people to have hope. You're encouraging people to tell more mature stories than the adolescent stories that we have been telling ourselves for decades. And I'm just wondering, do you feel like we're getting co-opted? Because, you know, the term sustainability, for example, is used in the context of sustainable development, which in some people's minds means keeping things going and keeping things growing and just doing more of the same and extracting more from the earth. So do you find that your work is being co-opted as well, or do you find that we have really strong sense of hope that our civilization won't disappear by 2100?
Well, that's a good question. I would say yes, it's being co-opted. I would say that's one of the powers of advertising in our society, is to take anything that you can, and if you go and co-opt it and turn it into a sales pitch. And if you go to the magazine stands now, you see this glossy magazine, Real Simple, for example. And it's really about buying stuff that will make your life appear to be more aesthetically simple and all the rest. So indeed, oh, absolutely, co-optation is just going on all the time. And it seems to me, you know, I think of Will Rogers. He said, too many people are spending money they haven't earned to buy things they don't want to impress people they don't like. And that's what we're doing. We haven't earned it. We're deep in debt. We're buying a lot of stuff we don't necessarily want it, but we do think we need to keep up with the Joneses and impress people we don't necessarily like all that much, But so it's a culturally defined story of who we are, what we're doing here. The more money you have, the more you can consume, and therefore the more happy you must be. So what we're saying is what matters is matter. It isn't aliveness. It isn't love. It isn't human connection and creativity. It's just matter. And how do you know you matter? Well, by how much matter you have. How big's the car? How big's the house? And so on. And so this is really perverse, I think. I think Lily Tomlin said, the problem with the rat race is even if you win, you're still a rat. And we just haven't figured that out yet, because the media is so powerful in perpetuating this mindset of consumerism that we are just going to run into this evolutionary wall. And I am very concerned that it isn't sustainable. And I've been saying since 1978 professionally that in the 2020s we're going to hit an evolutionary wall, and that means not only an ecological wall of physical growth, but an evolutionary wall of psychological limits to growth. We're going to run into ourselves, and then we're going to have to take a hard look in the mirror, and we're going to have to say, as a society, what are we doing here? Are we just here to consume, or are we here to contribute? And is there a larger meaning in life beyond our adolescence as a human family? And can we move into our early maturity and be a more contributing member of this world, if you will? So this is a time of pivotal change and decision making, I think.
Well, I know that you're not a particularly political person or political writer anyway. I know you give talks all around the world. It just seems to me, though, that at least here in America, we're voting against our best interests. We're voting for people who continue to be extractive, and they're not in favor of caring for the earth. So where is the dissonance? Where is the problem? Why people continue to vote against their best interests?
Well, actually, I am very political, and I've spent more than a decade working on media accountability in a transpartisan way to say, look, we're all in this together, Republicans, conservatives, and liberals and Democrats, whatever, it doesn't matter. We're all in this society together, and what we need to do is to up-level the conversation of our democracy and really begin to address the things that matter. And let me give you a very specific example. If you look last year at the four major television networks where we get most of our news, ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, and say how much time, put them all together, for an entire year, how much time did they devote to climate change? Given that key decisions are being made right now, how much time did those four networks over an entire year devote to climate change? It was about 90 minutes, an hour and a half. We are entertainment rich, we're knowledge poor, we don't know what's going on as a society, and so we are easy to manipulate. And that's what's happening. We're being manipulated by people and institutions of great wealth and power that do buy access to the airwaves that we in fact own, but we're just handing them over. So I think if we are going to have a promising future, it is going to require a dramatic up-leveling of the level of citizenship in our democracy. And I'm not pushing any particular point of view. I'm saying we're all in this together. Let's get together and talk about our common future. And in that, I think there's hope.
I've noticed that in addition to your blogs and your books, you also are involved with a group called Spring of Sustainability. Can you tell us about that organization and your involvement with it?
I'm involved in all kinds of organizations, and I do feel that we are way over consuming the earth. The earth has a carrying capacity to carry sustainably about 2 billion people. we're now a little over 7 billion people. And it's estimated before the end of the century, we will have upwards of 11 billion people. Now, that's upwards of 9 billion people more than the Earth can carry. And so we are in big trouble. And if you look at the impact then of climate change and species extinction, resource depletion, and all the rest, and put those together, we need to reframe and rethink how we're approaching consumption in this society. And this is an issue that's gone from the margins to the mainstream. It's gone from pretty much complacency to urgency. It has gone from kind of fantasy stereotypes about what simplicity is all about to realistic examples and archetypes. And it's gone from seeing this as a path of regress to seeing it as a path of progress. So we're in a transition time of change, and that change will be vital to whether we actually have the spring of sustainability, a new burst of life and creativity for ourselves and for the Earth.
We'll be talking more, much more, in part two about your big project, Great Transition Stories. For right now, though, can you give us a glimpse? So what does Duane Elgin have on his plate for the near or distant future?
Well, you do mention Great Transition Stories, and in a nutshell, if you go out and ask people how they see the future, often I get three words as an answer. They say, well, we're going to hit the wall. We're going to go in the ditch. We're going over the cliff. Something like that, just in a few words. And we have this utterly impoverished view of the future. And so if we don't have a promising view of the future, we pull back into the world that we currently live in, the advertiser's world of consumerism. And so that's a default perspective. And my sense is, if we are going to have a promising future, we need two things. Citizens need a larger voice, and we need a clearer vision. And so the media work I've done is really to claim a new voice for the public, and the visionary work looking at stories of great transition is a part of that visioning process. And some of the vision, this is all very simple. We can say, look, it's a time of planetary birth, and women understand birth. They say, you know, this is incredibly painful time. But on the other side of that pain and exhaustion and difficulty is a new life. Or you can see it's a time of maturation, a time of growing up. Well, everyone that's gone through adolescence knows this is not an easy rite of passage. There's a fire of initiation there. But on the other side of that is new freedom, new possibility, new creativity, and all the rest. Or you might say the global brain is waking up. And indeed, people will pull out their cell phones and say, look, you know, we now have the capacity to speak with ourselves as citizens around the Earth. We don't have to have this default perspective of complacency. We can instead engage in active conversation about a more promising future. So those are some of the stories that are empowering, that say, yeah, it's a time of movement, of transition to a new world for the whole Earth. And sustainability, simplicity of living, and richness of living that goes with that is an integral part.
Well, I want to thank you, Duane, for putting me on to some of the younger folks who were involved in voluntary simplicity and sustainability. You and I are a couple of old folks in that regard.
Yep.
But I've discovered, thanks to you, some of the younger generation, and I look forward to interviewing them in upcoming podcasts.
Good for you, Gerald.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Just my appreciation for your steadfast work over so many years, and you've been one of the pioneers, and I've learned from you and benefited from your work, so thank you.
Well, I'm pleased to be interviewing in this series starting in 2015 the people that I consider to be the champions of simple living today. I mean, we have a long tradition of simple living going back millennia, but I'm hoping to focus in on those folks who are active today.
Great.
Thank you so much, Duane.
You're so welcome, Gerald.
I hope to talk to you again. Be well.
Great. Thank you much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to my conversation with Duane Elgin. Be sure to hear more about his current big project, Great Transition Stories, in the next episode. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. You can share also on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, in window number 3. Since the four Whose Birthday episodes in November and December, we've accumulated a lot of feedback to share. All the blogs referenced here are still available. Visit simplelivingworks.org, window number 2, or click the social media button in the top menu. Peggy Hegeman says, "Thank you for these very timely resources and for connecting with me on LinkedIn. I was just going to start to look for resources for the Advent candle lighting, so these will come in very handy. I'm delighted to see the authors and our friends and former professors from my seminary days, Catherine and Justo Gonzalez." So I recommended Hope is a Candle and some others from Carols with Justice, which is our collection of hymns on our website. I got a lot of response to my blog, Alternate Veterans Day, November 11th. Charlie Kyle of Chicago said, "A good time to pray and reflect on the writings of Robert J. Lifton, especially Death in Life, Survivors of Hiroshima, published by Random House in New York City in 1968. And Charlie concludes by saying, "Lord, have mercy on us." Part of that blog was about dropping atomic bombs on Japan at the end of World War II. In regard to my blog, "Is Simple Living Libertarian?" and by the way, the answer to that is a firm no, Donna Buell said, "We wouldn't have food, most people wouldn't have water, shelter, heat, much of anything without community. How much does one give and how much does one keep? Is that how we divvy up our lives? A slice of this here and a piece of that there? Give your heart, your time, and your money if you have. Just like love, the rewards will be heavenly." That was the focus of that blog, was on building community. Likewise, in regard to my blog, "Is Simple Living Libertarian?" John DeGraff said, "Thanks to Gerald Iverson for this bit of good sense." Jackie Richard St. Hilaire gave a much longer response. She said, "I'm pretty liberal in my beliefs that what I have I share with others. I also have to take care of myself first. After all, even the Second Commandment tells me to love my neighbor as myself. The problem comes when I am overly concerned with protecting myself, my assets, etc. This is when I have to turn to the gospel. How much to keep for myself and how much do I share? This also means my inner self, not just my material belongings and, of course, money. I give more than 10% of my time to others. I can't get 10% of my earnings. I can barely get by, and I have trimmed away vacations and luxury items. I have more than I need to survive. I am not wanting for anything. I am a widow and am not living beyond my means. I have played that game and it was almost a disaster. Somehow I managed to get out of that situation after we lost our family business. Those were tough years. One cannot give 100% of their substance and then expect others to come to the rescue. I don't want my family to worry about my financial or health situation. I take care of what has been given to me. I don't believe God asks more of me than this." Thank you, Jackie, for those thoughtful responses. And Rick Zemlin said briefly, "Thank you for sharing this article, Gerald." In episode 37, I plan to present Duane Elgin part two, focusing on his current big project, Great Transition Stories. Later, I will interview more champions of simple living today, including author and blogger Susan Vogt, best known to me through Parenting for Peace, once a program of the Institute for Peace and Justice, and now her blogs, Family Matters and Living Lightly. Time to wrap up episode 36 of Simple Living Works podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes or Stitcher or your favorite podcast service. We'd love to get to know you as a subscriber to this podcast and to the blogs we post new each week. Subscriptions are free and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, at iTunes. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes. Click About. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution License. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage at simplelivingworks.org. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Simply so others can simply live, learn to live simply so others can live.